Welcome to Sestercast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean MacDonald, and I'm watching this series for the third time. My co-host, Kathy Campbell, is watching for the first time, so we make sure not to spoil any storylines beyond the episode we are currently discussing. However, this week, Kathy is still on hiatus. As you know, if you've been listening to the show, Kathy is pregnant and about to deliver a baby, so we decided it might make sense not to have her on the hook for appearing on podcasts for the next couple weeks. And instead, I have a special co-host guest, and that's Tim Mitra. Tim, thanks so much for joining me this week.
Hey, no problem. Happy to be here.
Why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself? I know what I know about you. We met and bonded over Orphan Black at a conference last summer. So and you told me that you lived right near some of the settings for Orphan Black, and that just fascinated me greatly. So tell us. So you do live in Toronto, correct?
Yeah. So I'm in Toronto. Basically, by day, I'm an iOS developer. I work at one of the major banks here in Canada, Toronto. And yeah, it's a true story. I live in Riverdale, Ontario, Riverdale, Toronto, which is a sort of place to be. There was even a TV show called Riverdale at one point. But and a lot of our and I'm just north of what we call Hollywood North, which is where the film sets are. They're a couple blocks south of me. But just mm-hmm. down the street from me, I literally walk, 5 minutes with my dog to the west, and I'm right on top of the Dyad Institute, which is actually, it's actually Bridgepoint Health. It's a new building they put up there. And the Don Jail, which is the original jail where they used to, the last person in Canada that was hung, I believe it was at the Don Jail. So that's right in my neighborhood. And
wow.
They since closed it down. Now it's an office building for the people in the hospital, but they did keep, when I moved in here 20 years ago, they still had prisoners in there and that kind of stuff. So, and it's part of it's like a museum. You can go and see how they used to, the old, almost like Alcatraz kind of cells. They kept a couple of them there, and you can go tour there from time to time. But my dog and I walk past Dyad Institute all the time. I get on the streetcar to go to work every morning, and I, right beside Dyad. So Orphan mm-hmm. Black's in my blood. And it turns out that the streetcar that I take is the King streetcar, and it goes right by the building that they used for the Orphan Black police station in the first episodes, right? And in fact, I think you mentioned one of the clones that was shot by Helena in the first episode.
Yeah.
I think she was parked in a car in that same parking lot beside this building. So,
oh, wow. Yeah,
so it's a small world. And so, when I, on Foursquare, I registered that building as the Orphan Black Police Station. I've been the mayor of that police station for about 2.5-3 years on Foursquare.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So, I mean, have you ever seen Orphan Black filming? Did you ever see it filming?
I'm sure I did. Well, because and also I should say that Mary shoots people. I don't know if Mary kills people is another TV show here in Canada about a doctor who does. She helps people commit. Or what do you call it when they want to die early, they're
sick. Right, assisted suicide.
Assisted suicide, yeah, thank you. That also stands in as her hospital as well, right? So it's relatively new. I mean, it's been up for less than 10 years, so it's still pretty, I think the drywall is still drying, so I think to sort of, pay the bills, they probably let it out. But often in our neighborhood, you'll be driving around or walking around, and you'll see those white vans that they park.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be a whole row of them and, little pylons and, little actors. And I've never really kind of hung around and seen them. But there's tons of TV shows shot in our neighborhood, all over Toronto. Actually, Toronto stands in for New York and Chicago in other movies as well.
Yeah.
And, we have The Expanse is filmed here. The new Star Trek Discovery is filmed here.
I did know that. Yeah.
So, and there's a couple of, CBC TV shows that are filmed here that are into syndication. I don't know if you can bleep this or you have to bleep this, but Schitt's Creek is filmed here. And that's not spelt the way you're thinking. And another show called King's Convenience is here as well. So,
yeah.
Yeah, we're big time in terms of, you'll often see your drive home will be blocked by some set of movie people. Yep.
Wow. That's, I used to live in New York City, and, there's filming that goes on there, but I think a lot more filming just got moved to Toronto because it was easier, and that made it easier on the people in New York City not to have their streets blocked.
Sure,
I'm really curious, you know, because one of the things about Orphan Black, as I've gotten to know it well, you know, is it's very Canadian mm-hmm. in many ways. Mm-hmm. But when I first started watching it, I had no idea. I didn't know who the actors were. It was something that was on Amazon Prime that my friend Allison said, you have to watch this.
Right, yeah.
And in fact, the very first scene, there's, you know, that train station scene where the train announcer says something like, next train to New York on whatever platform. And so I just assumed it was like sort of not even upstate New York, but north of New York, you know, the bedroom communities sure, of yeah. New York. As you watch it, you start realizing, oh, wait, you know, well, obviously, at least to me, it wasn't in New York, because just the buildings themselves didn't look very much like New York to me. And then you start seeing the license plates, you know, right, or you see yeah. the money
yep.
and you see
car go by. Yeah, yeah.
And you realize, yeah, it's in Toronto. Now, they never say we're in Toronto. They never really say where they are. But to me now, I feel sort of, you know, sheepish that I didn't realize it was Canada from the very beginning. But I'm sure to Canadians, it was pretty clear. There's probably actors that you recognize from your own local TV and other types of shows.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's funny. Canada's always been Toronto at least has been a safe place. Like, you see actors all the time. I mean, not all the time, but you see them downtown and we don't run up to them and there's no paparazzi and that kind of stuff, which I think is mm-hmm. what they like about filming here is, you know, we tend to be super polite. I mean, I stood at a parking meter one day with David Cronenberg waiting to pay, you know, kind of thing.
Mm.
And I was in front of him and, you know, and we just talked for a few minutes about, you know, his work and stuff like that. But, you know, like you don't walk up to them and ask for autographs and I guess you would in other places. Right. So,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them like here, and you find out things like Prince apparently was dating a girl here from Toronto and he lived in a house. He had a house here in Toronto and lived here for years. Right.
Wow.
Yeah. And you get, you know, major people like that. Right. So, I think, you know, Prince Harry was here when he was dating, what's her name? Meghan Markle is her name. Yeah.
the princess-to-be.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, it's kind of a nice place to visit, I guess, right? And of course, we have the world-class film festival, Toronto Film Festival.
Yes.
Premiere. So we see people, you know, of course, during that time, it's, you know, that's when we have the crowds and the large things. But yeah, mm-hmm. celebrity in Canada is kind of, we kind of leave you to your business, as it were, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I mean, had you seen any of the shows that Tatiana Maslany was on before she was on Orphan Black?
I didn't even know she was Canadian, to be honest with you. I knew some of the other actors were Canadian when I saw them. In fact, I'd never seen Felix before in anything else. And
yeah,
I really haven't seen her in anything else other than this. But,
she's done a lot of things because just, you know, I know now as a fan who has like collected things. There's something called Ginger Snaps.
Oh, that was filmed at my high school.
Oh,
yeah! I didn't realize that we're closing our school after like, I don't know, 50 years or something, and it just so happens I saw the film. I didn't watch it when it first came out, and I looked and I went, that football field looks awfully familiar, you know, like because you could see the back of the school, and I asked people about it. Yeah, it was filmed in our school, Small World.
So
she was in that
She wasn't a lead actress, but she was an actress. Maybe in Ginger Snaps 2.
I don't remember.
But, you know, I haven't seen it either. And I haven't really seen her in anything except she popped up one time in an episode of Parks and Recreation,
which was
funny. Yeah. But I will seek her out, you know, as she goes forward in her career because she's so impressive.
Well, she was just in a movie with Jake Gyllenhaal this year, isn't she?
Yes, right. That's right. She did a movie about the Boston Marathon.
So I think you were asking me how I first saw the show.
Yeah, like I was wondering, like when it was premiering, because I wasn't aware of it until it was already out for a season or so.
Right.
Did people know in Canada, like, oh, there's this new Canadian show called Orphan Black?
It's not so much that we knew it's Canadian. In fact, I don't think a lot of people know that things are necessarily Canadian until I tell them, right? Mm. But, I mean, and I'm talking about people in Toronto even, or people I go to work with. But we have a TV station here called Space, which is part of one of our conglomerate stations, right? And you know, I'm a sci-fi nut, so I've always sort of, you know, had that tuned in. And you know, they have a show called Inner Space, which they have on. It's sort of a sort of Entertainment Tonight, but like for the Sci-Fi Channel, for the Space Channel. And they show a lot of content that you get on Sci-Fi and Hulu and other places like that, and you know, Amazon Prime as well. And because I think if you look at the notes on the credits at the end credits, right, you'll see a lot of times you'll see that it's a co-sponsored, what's the new Margaret Atwood one?
Handmaid's Tale.
Handmaid's Tale is a co-production between a Canadian company and Hulu, right? Mm. That's filmed in Toronto too, actually. Around Toronto anyway. I'm not sure where, but our city hall stands in for some of the places. They say it's Boston, but it's actually Toronto. But and if you watch the end credits, you'll see a lot of times that a lot of our government money goes into making these films, right? So you'll see the OMDC and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I forget where the question was.
I'm just quizzing you about all this Canadian, you know, everybody knows down here that like most of our famous comedians, and when I say I don't mean American, but just on our shows, are Canadian musicians, Canadian actors, Canadian.
Yeah, we could rattle off. We could have a 20-minute just me dropping.
We could names, just you know? Go. Yeah, let's not even get started on that because yes.
But to answer your question though, initially, so I would have watched Orphan Black probably from the first episode because I watch Space all the time, and you know, as you're watching other shows, you know, they sort of say, oh, this new show is starting up and. I don't know why I watched it. It just sort of had something about I had no idea about the synopsis of the show. It's just sort of, hey, this really good show is coming up. And so I just remember watching it from the first episode. And you know, to be honest with you, I didn't really recognize even, like I said, I recognized the police station, but it took me a couple of episodes to realize where it was specifically. Or actually maybe a year or two after, and probably about, you know, a few seasons into it. But yeah, no, I watched it from day one. And of course, I've got the PVR, so I would have set it to record, and I'll usually record a new show when it comes out, and then I'll PVR the rest of the season and then just tune in and watch it at my leisure. But Orphan Black was definitely one I watched pretty much every episode, you know. And as I mentioned, I don't know if before we were recording, I mentioned The Expanse, which is another one that's filmed here in Toronto, and that's a good sci-fi film or movie. Dark Matter was also filmed here, and that recently got canceled after three seasons, and so that's your next podcast, Dark Matter, by the way.
Okay. Well, when we do that one, I'll be the one who hasn't watched it yet. There's definitely for me a backlog of shows I haven't been watching in favor of rewatching Orphan Black, which I seem to just keep going back to. I think we can talk about this episode. Although one last thing I wanted to ask you about, you said it was a little tricky for you to find it. Watch it again.
So I was really surprised by that because when you started the podcast, because we actually met last year, we were in a group photo, we were both speaking at the conference, and I don't know how we got on the topic of, I think I just sort of said, oh, I live right beside Dyad, right? And that's, I think, what we started our conversation. Yeah. But because I'd seen you at other conferences for many, many years and just never really had the chance to go and talk to you, but I want to talk to you about Women in Code, App Camp for Girls. But anyway, besides that, geez, what was I just saying? Oh yeah, so what? It was on Netflix, you know, on our Canadian. So our Canadian Netflix and your American Netflix, we have different rosters of shows, right? So you know, when you said, I think we talked like 6 months ago about me being a guest host, saying, "Oh well, no problem, I'll just watch, I'll catch up on Netflix." And of course, I went to look for it, and it wasn't there. And I thought, that's weird. So then I switched over to Amazon Prime, and it wasn't there either. And then I started Googling around, and, you know, I even tried to use the, you know, the trick with the VPN to try and VPN mm-hmm. to the States to see if I could get Netflix to let me watch it there. And then nothing. So I eventually dropped like $2.50 and bought it on iTunes to watch the episode, right? So, which is odd because, yeah. you know, I got it for free before, right?
Yeah. No, I know. We think of what's on Netflix as like that's our library of stuff, sure, yeah. but it's not.
Yeah, no, it's comes and not. Goes.
No,
yeah, it disappears after a while, which is
no. It's a totally different world than the one you and I grew up with, where first of all you had nothing saved or available to rewatch.
Gilligan's but Island, the Flintstones. Yep.
The Flintstones, yeah. Yeah, so this episode, we're in season 3, episode 4. It's called Newer Elements of Our Defense, mm-hmm. which, as we have noted before, that's a title that's comes from President Eisenhower's farewell address. And this one is interesting. So I feel like there have been cliffhangers, which, you know, if you haven't watched them like I have obsessively recently, the last episode, the episode 3 ended with Mark in the cornfield and Sarah seeing the cornfield and a shot rings out and birds fly up and that was the end.
Right.
So we're picking up back at that cornfield. Bonnie is there. Sarah's in a barn and she needs to hide from Bonnie. And here's one more question I have. I'm sorry to make you like you're the Canadian expert here, though.
We have corn in Canada,
that barn, yeah. there's a Confederate flag.
All right, yeah.
I mean, is that ever a thing you see in Canada?
No, unless you're a fan of Dukes of Hazzard, but no, we don't really see Confederate flags like you would in the States, or you used to in the
yeah.
States, I guess.
So I thought that was a little interesting, like just giving the whole set that feeling of like where it doesn't really matter where you are, but a Confederate flag, you know, is a symbol. So,
Bonnie, with the
Bonnie's in the barn, but Sarah managed to sneak out and she goes in the cornfield and she finds Mark. He's really injured. He's bleeding. And she helps him, you know, tie off his wound. He's telling her what to do. And at that moment, two more dudes come in a truck and, Bonnie is telling them, go find him in the cornfield. So Sarah helps Mark get away. And that's the opening scene. As usual, the opening scenes tend to be pretty dramatic in mm-hmm. Orphan Black. But I thought as we go through this episode, there's a lot of things that really tie together. And maybe we could just start off by just checking off one clone, which is Allison, who is doing something completely different. and then we'll check in with Cosima, and then I think we just have to talk about Sarah and Helena and the various other actors around them sure. all together. But, oh, I did forget to ask you another question I wanted to know is, like, do you have a favorite clone?
Oh, Cosima, for sure.
I like them all.
Yeah, I mean, I like Sarah. I think Beth is my least favorite clone. You know, it's funny, we're talking before the show, but Helena used to freak me out too. Like, I really didn't like Helena at first. And here's the beauty of, we talked about this on another podcast, you and I, but the whole beauty of the performance is that it's so convincing that I don't see them as the same person. Right. In fact,
right.
As I watched it again this time, I really had to look hard to see that, okay, yeah, that's her in makeup, you know, but Helena as a character, you know, and in terms of how she worked into the show, like, you know, in first season or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't like the character, you know, that kind of stuff. Cosima, I kind of mm-hmm. always sort of liked because she's the brainy one. And, you know, Sarah, I liked. And I liked the, you know, Sarah had the English accent. I actually was born in England, so I'm kind of tuned into that, you know. But yet she was playing the Canadian, detective that got killed at the beginning, you know, so she was switching mm-hmm. in and out of that persona. It's it's amazing performance over there.
It is amazing. Yeah. I agree. Like, yeah, I always, forget that they are not separate people with separate actors playing them. But yeah, so Allison, I mean, she, I love Allison and Donnie, actually, mm-hmm. too, because they have definitely evolved in the show to be more interesting and a little more edgy, and especially this season where they decided to go into the,
drug dealing business.
The soap dealing business, excuse me, right. And Donnie comes in and he's all upset and he thinks somebody's been following him. So Allison, you know, as usual, is like, just calm down. Let's just move the drugs out of the house, mm-hmm. which honestly, you know, if somebody's coming to get you, they're going to look in your garage as well.
Do they have the pit in the garage at this point in the show?
They do have the pit. Okay. Well, the pit is there covered. And covered.
Yeah. Just checking.
Famous feature of their house, which, you know, as Allison says, we can't move because right. what are we going to do right. with Dr. Leakey? Allison is there. So they're moving their drugs into the garage and there's a guy in their backyard and he's all like, you know, hey, you know, my boss sent me, I hear you've got some property of his. And Allison is like, nope, we bought these things from Ramon. And he said, well, they weren't Ramon's to sell. And Donnie, he's in this season, he's like, he's come a long way from where he was in the beginning, but he's still got a ways to go in terms of like his level of confidence and not saying stupid things. Like he says, well, he's a freshman. He's really busy. Ramon maybe forgot to check in with you, but they're, they've got to go now to have a meet, up with a drug dealer they don't know. Mm-hmm. So they go, it's like the soccer field, which is Allison's, you know, one of her best settings as a soccer mom at nighttime though. And there's a big truck and pulls up and same guy gets out and checks Allison for weapons and says, you know, she can go. He doesn't want to talk to you. And Donnie's like, again, oh, I got your back, honey. As she's hopping into a car with somebody she doesn't know who he is other than he's some kind of drug kingpin. And it turns out to be her high school boyfriend.
Right, right.
Then that was funny. And he was cute, I thought, you know, like just he had the right amount of cuteness and street smarts and, you know, very different from Donnie. And so Allison is able to negotiate with him because they still have that like connection, even though apparently she dumped him in high school. He still, I wouldn't say carries a torch for her exactly, but he's still intrigued by her and she's equally intrigued by him. And their drug dealing is going to go to a new level. And I liked how he said like that soap idea was genius. Put Allison and Donnie on the shelf and check in with Cosima, who is hanging out at Felix's apartment. And I think the main thing about this scene, well, there's two things. So Cosima's talking on the phone with Scott. I love Scott. He's one of my favorites. They're talking about the book that Dr. Duncan gave to Kira, The Island of Dr. Moreau. And then Felix walks in. And he's like, oh, my God, you know, that's hideous. And he's looking at the sweater she has, which does look kind of weird, like very fluffy white sweater. And he says, Felix says, like, it looks like you've been mounted by a llama. So that's my choice for best line of this episode. And he sort of leans over. He's like, expensive perfume, pretentious French cigarettes. Oh, yeah, Eskimo pie. Cosima is pining for Delphine, which... Right. Felix says, let's go to Bobby's bar. And they go down there and Felix has some app on his phone, which, you know, people are always doing, looking at their phone while they're supposed to be listening to the person they're with. Mm-hmm. And he's asking her some questions and then it's boom. He's like, oh yeah, I'm setting up your online dating profile. So,
right.
I mean, if I had to have an online dating coach, Felix would be my choice. He would be good at that, I think. So meanwhile, she's holding on to her phone because she's waiting for a call from Sarah. And I think we can start talking about what's going on with Sarah and all the other
Mark. Yeah.
Mark. Yeah. It's an interesting episode because there's a lot of scenes in this episode. I think I've never actually tried to figure out the data exactly, but for an episode about Orphan Black where there's so many clones that could be in a scene, this episode has a lot of scenes with no clones. Hmm. Because so starting with, you know, after the scene in the cornfield, there's Bonnie taking Grace back to the Proletheans, and they apparently, you know, one of their members has a house and he let them come stay in it because, as we know, Helena burned down their compound.
Yeah.
You do not want to get on the wrong side of Helena, but everybody knows that. So they've got this smaller house. There's a smaller community there. Alexis is there. Now, Alexis, the midwife, you probably didn't really catch your eye in this episode, but earlier this season and last season, she is, you know, a minor character among the Proletheans, but a major person in Orphan Black because she's played by Catherine Alexandri, who is the acting double of Tatiana Maslany.
Really? Well, yeah.
So, yeah. So if you ever want to see what that double actually looks like, Alexis is the one.
Huh.
So there's this character, Mr. Appleyard. He was awfully nice to Gracie too. So Gracie comes in and you think, oh, she's back home with her people. She's forgetting about Mark, although you know, they are married at this point. They got married in the last episode of season two, and she was removing her wedding ring so her mother wouldn't see that. But it goes, you know, downhill pretty quickly, almost immediately, where Gracie starts to experience really bad abdominal pain, and she miscarries the baby or babies that she was carrying that were Helena's babies with Henrik's, you know, had fertilized them. One of the creepier bits of Orphan Black was her carrying the children that were the actual product of her own father. And as soon as she's miscarrying, Bonnie is at the door, and this is where Bonnie just really shows her true stripes as the worst mother ever on Orphan Black, and that's saying a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
She's furious with her. She lost the baby, and she gives her, you know, tells her, like, you're out of the community again. We don't want you. You have, God has punished you. You have ruined our family legacy, and you know the only reason we took you back was because you were pregnant, and now you're not pregnant. So I assume in episode 5, Gracie will be looking for new digs.
Poor Gracie.
Yeah, you have to feel sorry for her. She's had to go through a lot. Meanwhile, so Mark is with Sarah. Sarah's trying to help him, and he wants her to help him take a bullet out of her leg. I mean, the show isn't that gross. Like, I have a limit of what I can watch.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode definitely hit some of my...
This is a memorable scene, because, you know, of all the scenes that I remember from the, what is it, 5 or 6 seasons that the show was on, that's one scene that I remember is Sarah having to help him remove that bullet. And the two actors really do it. I mean, the special effects and the two actors really do make it look like they're performing that operation, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty gross.
It's pretty gross. Well, it won't be the grossest thing in this episode, but we'll get to that. I mean, Sarah's asking him questions. She's like, I won't help you unless you answer some questions. But he says he doesn't know where Helena is because he doesn't know where HQ is because he's been
In the commune or whatever, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and the Prolethians for however long. So she doesn't really get much for her work as a surgeon. But Mark does finally totally pass out, as he should. I mean, he should have been. The fact that they ran out of that cornfield when he's like basically bleeding to death was, you know, it's a suspension of disbelief.
Mm-hmm. I was kind of wondering where they went to myself, you know.
But he does pass out, and Sarah calls a ambulance for him, which he had been resisting when he was conscious. And then she goes to the motel where he had been staying with Gracie to find what he had gotten from, I don't remember the dude's name, but they got that box. So you remember the box of stuff that there's like notebooks and such in it. Mark was disappointed because he expected to find like some kind of test tubes in it. So when Sarah is able to look at this stuff that they did collect, she calls Cosima, and that's when Cosima figures out that Johansson was using caster material. So we learn a few things there. Johansson was Ethan Duncan's assistant, and he used the caster genetic material to impregnate his own wife, Bonnie, to have one of these caster children, which died as a baby.
Oh, that's the baby. So, okay,
right. Yeah. Mm. So, well, we don't know he's died yet at this point. Cosima just says they used the material, and they did the SCNT, which are a somatic cell nuclear transfer.
Okay.
I sound like a scientist now, right? Mm-hmm. So Bonnie and Henrik had this child, and Sarah says to Mark, who shows up, you know, he somehow is picked up by an ambulance and is put back into shape where he can run out and catch up with Sarah and almost, you know, kill her because he's mad at her for calling an ambulance on him. And she says, hey, we can get this material, and we just have to find Henrik's son. And Mark knows where he is because Mark knows the story, and he takes her to this house and takes her around the back of the house where there's a graveyard and says, yeah, they had a baby before Gracie, and the baby died, and here's its grave. And then he makes Sarah dig the grave.
Right, while he watches.
While he watches, because he may be breathing and conscious, but he's not he's not in that great shape.
Yeah,
I mean, it's actually an interesting question, because one of the things we learn about Helena, you know, early on, is that she has this incredible restorative powers. You know, when she is injured, when she is shot, her body somehow manages to overcome that. And Kira has that too, we see in the first season. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the caster clones have that. I don't think that's what's keeping Mark going. Although I think they just have their good military training. They've been raised to be really healthy.
Sure. Yeah, they can march through it, as it were, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I've never heard it mentioned, but this episode made me think, I wonder if there's some aspect of that with the caster as well. But we more often see the caster failing than overcoming some.
So when she's digging the grave, and because I mean, I guess the big reveal for the girl clones, the Lita clones, is that they find out that the caster clones are actually related to them genetically, right?
Right.
And because he doesn't, she say, which is it, she says to him that he's her brother, or he says that,
yeah,
he's her sister, and
well, yeah, she calls him brother, right. Like she says, hey, we've got to do this, brother. Yeah.
And he gets upset with her for saying that.
Yeah. They don't want to know. So, yeah, Cosima figured that out in the previous episode, that the caster and the Lita clones were from the same, you know, DNA source, and or related DNA source.
Does that mean that head guy, Henrik, what's his name?
Mm-hmm.
Henrik.
Johansson, yeah.
Is their dad?
No.
Okay.
No, they... he's just the creepy guy who keeps trying to create more clones. I don't know. No, they don't have a dad. I mean, there's a twist to the whole thing, you know, later on, but basically the two clone lines are related. Yeah, so Mark passes out, and that's concerning. You know, Sarah doesn't want him to die either. But at that moment, Rudy, who, if you can't remember your various caster names, he definitely is the one with the scar. So yeah, Rudy is the unpredictable caster clone, and he doesn't like Sarah to begin with. He thinks Sarah thinks she's better than them, you know, and she was working with Dyad, and Dyad had captured him, you know. So he says she comes in here like the Queen of England asking me questions, and he didn't like that. So he has something against Sarah. So Sarah whacks him with a shovel.
Right. Yep.
That's how she gets away, and because he's about to kill her, and she runs and runs and hides into a barn, which at that moment, honestly, like once Rudy walks into the barn and she's hiding behind other stuff in the barn, it's just like a horror movie. It's a slasher movie, I guess, because I never go to see slasher movies, but I was sitting there as I was watching it saying, like, I don't know how anybody can tolerate this kind of tension where the bad guy is yelling out to the victim and is mocking her and taunting her with her daughter's voice. And Sarah, at one point, you know, she can't see him. There's no sound. You're like, he's going to be right behind her, right? So, and he is. And he's got a knife now at her neck. And she's like, you've got what you want. Just let me live. But he dislikes her so intensely. He has no intention of doing that. But right at that moment, then Mark, rising again from the dead, comes and he's right behind Rudy and says, hey, you know, stand down, soldier. And there's this pretty great scene between the two caster of who is in charge here and who's going to listen to whom. And I was, even though I've seen it before, I couldn't remember exactly what was going to happen, because I did think, oh, Mark is going to just shoot Rudy because he is unpredictable and he's not really an asset to their cause with that unpredictability. But then they hug it out.
The two boys hug it out?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, they're like, brother, you know, like they were all raised together, you know. Sure, it's very different from the Lita clone. Mm-hmm. So that's when they turn around and look at Sarah and say, hey, we don't leave loose ends. And that's basically the cliffhanger for this episode.
Right.
But we kind of have to circle back around to Helena. But I didn't really want to talk about Helena's part, because when we get to the end of her part, I'm done. Like,
oh, you can't talk about that?
No, I can talk about it, but it just I just feel like it would be really.
So let's talk around it though. So they find this, like, there's two other caster clones. I don't remember the guy with the one that seems to be in charge. That's not Mark or Rudy. That's another guy, right? The brother.
Well, I think that's Rudy, isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah, because then right? Then there's a point where Cody says to Rudy, "You've got to go find Mark," you know, and finish the mission,
yeah,
or finish him off or whatever.
Right. Okay. And then there's Dr. Cody, who's the lady doctor,
Who's
doing some sort of weird surgery and, you know, trying to keep Helena drugged up. And is Helena pregnant at this point? I can't remember.
Yes, she is pregnant. And they didn't know that when they first took her in, but there's a kind of dramatic scene where Cody comes in while they're trying to do like stress tests on her, which are essentially torture, and says like, stop, you know, she's pregnant.
Right. So then, but there's the caster that's in the chair, let's say.
Yeah. He's got
the head rig on. And
yeah.
And he says to Helena when she finally, she puts a tourniquet on her arm. And
yeah.
So they, because she knows they're going to drug her with an injection, because she bangs her head against the door to get their attention.
And so she puts this tourniquet on her arm, so they come and give her a shot. And so I guess the tourniquet keeps the drug from going into her
bloodstream. Yeah, that's another, like, I keep my file of clone tricks for future reference. Right.
And then so she,
that's one of them, to block off your blood supply in your arm, so when they inject you with the sedative, it doesn't take effect.
Right away, yeah. So then she starts to explore the compound a bit, and she finds that this other Castor brother is having some sort of experiments or tests being done on him. And then she passes out, because, of course, the drug does go into her body. But she manages to get back to her room just in time for Mark to walk in, who's, you know, and pulls out his gun because he's going to find out where she is. And she's, like, lying on the ground beside the bed, which I think was a great sort of vehicle, because you're thinking, oh, no, he's going to go start chasing her around. But then he spots her underneath on the floor, right? And goes, oh, there's that goofy Helena on the floor again, right? And then she makes takes a chicken bone or a steak bone, or it makes it into a
I think it's a pork chop bone, to be honest, but like that, yeah, she had gotten this piece of meat with like a very that's what it looked like to me, like it could have been a steak bone too, like I don't think a chicken has that shaped bone.
And so she, in using her teeth, she shapes it, and she ends up picking the lock on the door so she can escape.
Yeah.
And then she goes to the Castor brother, and we find out that, you know, he's had this horrific brain surgery done on him, which we don't have to talk about if you don't want to. But
No, I do.
Okay, so, my question to you, since I'm just coming back to the show after not watching it since it was, the last time I watched the show was the final episode, right? So which was, what, a couple of years ago, I guess, right?
Last summer, actually, not that long ago.
Seems like forever ago.
That's why when I met you, I had just watched it. It was on right before that conference. Okay, yeah. And I was trying to decide about, because I couldn't get it like live, but I would get it on iTunes, but late at night, like at midnight. Right. But I had like a 10 a.m. flight, and I was like, I don't care. I'm staying up to, I like set an alarm so that I could wake up, watch it in the middle of the night, and then go back to sleep.
Well, it's funny, you know, I don't know any other people that I really don't know anybody else who's watched it besides you, to be honest with you. Like, it's funny, because I remember, you know, watching Battlestar Galactica and telling my son, I do another podcast called Spotcast with Jaime Lopez and my son, Jonathan Kuhlein, about the whole, about sci-fi. So I remember telling him to watch Battlestar Galactica, and yet he never got around to it. And then eventually when he did, he's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. I waited this long to watch it. And then, and the same thing with Orphan Black. I don't know too many people. I probably know a few people around who I have a friend named Annie who probably watches it, but other than the people who are the hosts on the Interspace on Space TV, I don't know anybody else who's watched it. Right. So. Except for the fact that we all know Tatiana Maslany is an amazing actress because she keeps winning all these Emmys and Junos.
All the awards.
Yeah, exactly. But, anyway, so why were they – so who is this Castor that they were doing this surgery on? And when he sees Helena, he finally has a dialogue with her. He just says, kill me, right?
Yeah.
So who is he and what were they doing?
Well, you know, I meant to Google that before we started talking, but now I'm Googling it now. Because his name, he had a name. I picked that up, which was Parsons.
Right, Parsons, yeah.
Okay, here, and there's a wiki.
Here I could read through real quick, too.
Yeah, but Parsons was the male clone who was the subject of brutal experiments performed by Dr. Cody. I think everything we saw is all you need to, is all that we know about him.
Right, okay.
And so... we don't know anything about, I mean, that he didn't appear in previous episodes, and he's not appearing in future episodes.
Right. No, yeah. Well, the reason why. So it's interesting. There's a picture here on this, on the Mary Sue website, where it's got a picture of the actor, Ari Millen, with his plastic or like the mold they made of his head. And you can see that what they'd done was they had gone around and they had cut the top of his head off. And so they could expose his brain, and I guess they had electrodes with alligator clips, believe it or not, which is, I guess is what you use alligator clips from Radio Shack for brain surgery all the time, right? But they had alligator clips in his head, and so that's, you know, when he says to Helena, kill me, she has easy access to his brain, and that's so she manages to help him through his suffering, right?
Right. So. Yeah, and it's a really dramatic scene, obviously, because she doesn't know what's wrong with him And when she first sees him, you can't see that his brain is exposed.
Yeah, it's covered, right.
It's covered. And she exposes it, and he's said, has already said, kill me. He's like, obviously in pain. And they, one of the things that they do in that scene too, is they use the nearer my God to thee, theme, which they've used before. I mean, with the Prolethians, they actually played nearer my God to thee in the scene in this episode, but last season, the final episode where they finally reveal the casters, they use that music theme, which is nearer my God to thee. So it's got, you know, all kinds of like weird, creepy religious undertones. And especially with Helena talking to Parsons and saying, you know, you have been abandoned by your family like I've been abandoned by mine, and I will take the pain away and the pain will be no more. It's very religious, you know, in its overtones. And Helena's already been this like kind of angel figure throughout. You know, she draws angels and she has these angel wing, you know, scars on her back, like that she's carved in like the pattern of angel mm-hmm. wings. And so it's quite, you know, moving and impressive, that scene for sure. And again, even with the casters, I forget that they're all the same guy and they all look alike, right, really, yeah, you know, yeah. Pretty much alike. But when I think about now all the scenes that the two of them, Ari Melin and Tatiana Maslany, had in this episode, I mean, they did practically half of the show, just the two of them.
Right, right. Yeah.
Helena, you know, she reaches for a scalpel and she just plunges it into his brain. And then if that wasn't enough, she like, you know, she cranks it around to make sure he's really dead. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's when Cody comes in at that moment and she's like, you stupid girl. And Helena says, you say you love boys, but you lied. You are a shit mother. Mm-hmm. And that is good in the development of the plot, because Cody has been trying to win Helena over by acting as if she's the good mother. Right. And like Siobhan is the bad mother and Sarah's the bad sister and they've abandoned you, but you're important to me. You know, we'll never take you for granted, is what she's been trying to sell her. And so at this moment, the scales are off of Helena's eyes. Not that I think they were actually on there. Helena's pretty hard to convince. And Cody's true colors come out. And that's how the show does not end, because that's not the last scene, mm-hmm. but it should have been. So how did it feel to watch Orphan Black after a hiatus of
a couple of years? Yeah. Well, it's been a few years since I saw this particular episode. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember this part of the sort of progression being totally fascinating. What I enjoyed about the show was sort of trying to find out, you know, where these clones came from and, you know, why they were dying. And that was in the initial mm-hmm. plot vehicle, right? And then Siobhan's whole role in the place. And then we can't talk about the guy that comes in later. But so the Max Headroom guy, forgetting the name of the actor, Dr. Leakey. So the first person that Allison kills is her watcher. Cause I think the whole original part of the show in first season was sort of figuring out who the watchers are, who's keeping an eye on these.
Oh yeah. The monitors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And cause she kills her neighbor, right? Who she thinks is her monitor.
She doesn't really kill her. She just doesn't intervene.
Yeah, lets her die. And then, cause she thinks she's her monitor, but when it turns out that Donnie's actually her monitor, right? Isn't that correct?
Yeah.
So,
And Donnie killed Leakey by accident, by accident.
Down the street from my house, by the way. Just you know, as I was saying before.
Oh, really?
The scene was filmed like, yeah, down the street from my house. So in my mind, Dr. Leakey's dead somewhere over in my neighborhood. Although, I think we were talking about before, didn't you say at one point, I think we were talking about this off the show or in a past episode or something, like when you were on Roundabout, that Allison lives in Scarborough or...
Right.
Do they mention
yes.
Scarborough or they allude to?
They don't mention it per se, but I think you see it on her passport or something. Oh, okay. And Felix refers to it as Scarberia.
Yeah, which is my nickname for it too.
Yeah, again, it's like kind of set in Toronto, but you don't know that, and they never acknowledge that, yet they don't try to hide it totally either. So
right, yeah, yeah. It's difficult when the stores go by. And yeah.
It doesn't... nobody really speaks with a real Canadian accent, I would say. Like, heavy Canadian accent, I should say. Where we go, oh, they just said a boot, yeah, you know, funny, so though, we know funny, they're Canadian.
It's funny you say that, because I know that there's a lot of really good vocal coaches here in Canada. Like, a lot of actors, mm-hmm. American actors and Australian actors and British actors actually come to Canada to work with these people to learn how to lose their accents, right? So mm-hmm. I kind of wonder, now that you say that, because I really don't notice... myself that they're not speaking with the Canadian. I don't notice any sort of regional tone to their speech, right? Myself. I mean, I don't know if I sound Canadian to you or not. Probably have said
yes,
right
you do.
And all, stuff all the way through the show, but the they might. I wonder if they worked on that. That would be like you know, as much as how much effort they put into the art direction of the show and the science mm-hmm. and everything else, I'm sure they had vocal coaches to sort of work on the accents. I mean, Tatiana is from Winnipeg, which is, you know, mm-hmm. way on the outskirts. It's one of our middle provinces, right? So
right.
I don't know that they necessarily have a regional sounding dialect, you know, but...
Well, Tim, I'm so happy you came on to SestraCast and sure. You're not our first brother, Sestra, mm-hmm. because we did have Jason Snell right. on for one episode, but... You are our first Canadian, and I really was hoping to have more Canadians on by now.
Here's a glass of maple syrup. Let's raise a glass of maple syrup and have some poutine.
So thank you very much for staying on. So tell people where they can find you and your various podcasts in case they want to sure. hear you talk about something else besides Helena and Sarah and Cosima and Allison.
Sure. Okay. Well, so I always say on our show that I'm Tim Mitra, TimMitra on the Twitter machine, and that's the best way to get a hold of me. But so I'm also on a podcast called More Than Just Code. If you're into iOS development, if you search for iOS development in the podcast app, we come up number one worldwide, which we just mm-hmm. did that all. We grew that all up organically ourselves.
Wow.
We do a Star Trek Discovery-based show called SpockCast.
Oh.
And we're currently in hiatus right now. We're waiting for Jaime, one of our co-hosts, to go see Avengers and Blade Runner so we can talk about those two movies. But we don't just focus on the TV show. We talk about all kinds of other things. Jonathan is a well-read comic book reader, and so we do all kinds of interesting things about different sci-fi on there. So, you know, if Orphan Black was in our radar, we would talk about that kind of thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also on Roundabout Creative Chaos with Tammy Coron, and we do sort of, we talk to creative types, actors, directors, yourself. We had you on the show a couple of weeks ago. Publishers, you know, movie stars, mm-hmm. radio personalities. We've had all kinds of people on, and we talk about, you know, their creativity and how they kind of, how they do their work, what kind of tools they use, that kind of stuff. So it's kind of fascinating that way. And that's, yeah, so that's how to find me and what I'm doing these days. So,
well, thank you so much. And thanks to everybody for listening. If you want to learn more about SestraCast, see our show notes, our links to interesting articles or things you need to know to understand Orphan Black, go to SestraCast.com. We're part of the Incomparable Network. I'm Mac Genie on Twitter, and Kathy is Mrs. Soup. And we would love it if you went to iTunes and rate it the podcast or even left a review. We really appreciate that. We went from zero reviews and ratings to a nice little handful now. So thank you, listeners. You rock. Until next time, we'll be talking to you about Orphan Black.
You should also say that you're SestraCast on Twitter, too.
I should, because this is Kathy's job. So what do I know?
Oh, I see. Nah.